How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We are live this week from Las Vegas, Nevada. I am down here for the UFC 130 event, plus our annual convention, our Wrestling Observer Online Figure 4 Online Convention. Had about 60, 65 people out here over the course of the week just hanging out and having a good time and going to the show as well. The convention was the real main event of this weekend. But we are here to talk all the news with Mike Sempervivi, as we are every weekend. And Sempervivi, by the way, is coming out next year. And we don't really plug the convention here on this program, but next year, as the Memorial Day weekend comes upon us, we will be telling you, the listener, how to come out here and have some fun in the sun with all of us here at Wrestling Observer Live. But the news, that's the important thing to talk about today. We have a lot of it. UFC 130, we're going to talk about all of the matches on the show, all of the news. We've also got a bunch of breaking news from pro wrestling, including a CMLL star, one of their top heels, is leaving the company. And in fact, as of the time we're talking about this here right now, CMLL might not even know. He's scheduled to main event their next big show in a mask match in just a couple of days, about 2 weeks actually. We'll tell you about that, why he is coming in, what they're bringing him in for, and I guess his future. It's a very interesting situation, and it tells everybody really a lot about what WWE is thinking of Mystico right now, and it's a very interesting story. We'll get into that here in just a moment. Brock Lesnar did, in fact, have surgery for his diverticulitis. He'd been going back and forth on whether to do it. He got the surgery, and he's going to be out maybe only a couple of months before he can start training again, which is very interesting because when he first talked about surgery, there was talk that it could end his career. So we'll talk about that. Plus, WWE Over the Limit last week, which I went to live. The Fedor Emelianenko-Dan Henderson fight is official. We've got new Ultimate Fighter coaches. Vince McMahon talked to Time Magazine about Randy Savage. We'll tell you what he said. TNA from this past Thursday night, the rating for that show. Week 2 of the wrestling-based TNA, supposedly. Also, Flair contempt of court. What happened there? We'll talk about Karma. She's got a big announcement tomorrow. We'll talk about that, what's going on, and so much more. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. We're going to kick it off right after this first break. Live from Vegas, you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here live from Las Vegas. Talk about all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're going to talk about UFC 130 here in a bit. But first off, the big story of the weekend is the signing of Averno, one of the top two Rudos from CMLL in Mexico. He is being brought into WWE, and the gist of the story is that Averno got a tryout last fall, I believe. And I think he was one of the guys. I know that Alex Kozlov had done some of the, if you watch some of the vignettes with Mystico, Sin Cara, when he does all the high flying, that was shot in L.A., and I think that Alex Kozlov was one of his opponents in those little vignettes that flew around for him. And the other guy, I believe, was Averno. But regardless, Averno got a tryout, and he didn't get signed. And the concern at the time was that he was too old. Now, apparently, there is concern in WWE that Sin Cara is not getting over the way that they wanted. They're concerned that he's in there with matches with Chavo Guerrero, and the matches aren't great. And apparently they went to him and they said, if you could work with anybody in the world to have just great matches, who would that be? And he said Averno. And so they went and signed Averno to a deal. And apparently a couple of weeks ago, Averno, this would presumably be after he agreed to come into WWE, he went to CMLL and he said, listen, I want a mask match, and you either give it to me as soon as possible, or I'm going to go out, and whichever promoter offers me the most money, I'm going to do the mask match with them. So CMLL signed him and La Máscara to a match at their show that's coming up in, I believe, 2 weeks, June 17th, I believe. It's going to be him and La Máscara, mask versus mask, and obviously, by now, you probably know who was scheduled to win that match. So he's going to go to WWE, apparently, as probably under his real name, which I believe is Rey Ortiz II, if I recall correctly. But he's going to go in there, and his role is to get Sin Cara over in the ring. Go in there, have great matches, showcase him, and make him look like a star, which is what WWE wants out of him. And it's a pretty interesting situation because Averno is like a pretty big star in CMLL. He's one of their top rudos, and he's going to WWE for a very specific role. Your role is to go in there and work this guy's style and make him look good. Now, after that job is done, I don't know what you do with Averno. I don't know if you try and make him a regular WWE roster member. You know, my guess would be that after he's done his duty, he will end up being like a guy on Superstars and then released down the road. Who knows? Maybe he'll learn to work the style. But it's a very interesting thing to walk away from CMLL or really any other company to come in and have such a specific role that really does not appear to have a long-term upside. But he's going in there. He's going to make Sin Cara look good, and we'll see where it goes from there. What are your thoughts on that whole deal?
Hey, well, they used to do that in territories. You know, you have a guy that's coming in, you want him to look good. You get another guy in there who he's comfortable with that gets him over and looks good. This is, you know, obviously he was either keep him in Florida for a little while until he starts to really get comfortable with working, you know, in English and with the, you know, the American style, or bring him in with somebody like Super Crazy and Tajiri in ECW where, you know, they're working with, you know, somebody that they're comfortable with to get him over. It's what they should have done in the first place. So this is a good idea. I can't believe he'd come in as Rey Ortiz Jr. I would figure they would smack a mask on him because, you know, obviously they're reaching out more and they're being more transparent when it comes to the Mexican audience. But I don't see there being a problem with putting a mask on him, too, and, you know, having some, you know, giving him some other kind of wacky name or something like that. And, you know, even when this thing is over, he could still have legs because, you know, with what they want to do in Mexico and how much they're trying to invest into Mexico, if this goes over well, he can possibly become a Funaki-like kind of guy who is there to maybe try to get, you know, somebody as they continue on, because I guess they're looking at two other luchadors as well. You know, as they continue on with trying to go down there, they have somebody that can give them a maybe what Primo they thought he was supposed to be or what Chavo is supposed to be, which is just kind of getting these guys through and getting them familiar with the WWE audience. So he could have legs that way, too.
I could be wrong, but the impression I got just from watching how they handled Sin Cara and Rey Jr., I think they only want one masked luchador on each show. You know, even if they bring in more guys from CMLL, I just have this impression that, like, they'll be unmasked and you're only going to have the two high-flying young guys. Maybe if Rey retires, they'll bring in another masked guy for the other brand. But I get that impression that they don't want a bunch of masked guys running around.
Yeah,
and
they could have a couple in Florida, though, and they could have, you know, a guy like him on, if that's the way it's going to be, on Superstars, and one on Raw and one on SmackDown, but maybe one or two that are on Superstars and just go to house shows or, you know, bounce back and forth, you know, one guy between house shows and FCW or something like that, where, I mean, that could have, again, that could have legs, as long as it's not like they're going to become WCW and just sign a bunch of guys who end up then becoming nameless and faceless, even though they, you know, they have different personalities and everything. They just become this big blend, but they can have a couple guys on there, I think, which if they're going to try to go into Mexico this much, they might as well.
You know what's interesting about the whole story to me, though, and I actually was ranting about this a little bit on our other audio shows at WrestlingObserver.com after I went to the Over the Limit pay-per-view. We'll talk about Over the Limit, but the thing about that show is I was really excited to go in there and see Sin Cara live. And if you recall last week on this show, I was talking about the idea that I saw Sin Cara and Daniel Bryan have a match for free on SmackDown. That was really great, and that was a setup for Sin Cara versus Chavo on pay-per-view. And I thought, why am I watching Daniel Bryan and Sin Cara for free, and then I have to pay to see Sin Cara and Chavo? Who wants to see a Sin Cara and Chavo match? And furthermore, I thought, okay, they must have seen Chavo Guerrero and thought, Mexican, this guy must be able to do lucha. When in reality, if you look at Chavo Guerrero's career, he had like maybe a year and a half in Japan and Mexico back when I was in high school. This was like in the mid-90s. And ever since that time, throughout all of WCW and all of WWE, all he's done is U.S. style. So he's not a luchador. He's not a guy that's going to go in there and have a great match with Sin Cara. And, you know, it's one thing if like you have good matches on the road and then you do a match on pay-per-view and it's no good. They were having bad matches on the road. And so they have bad matches on the road. You put them on pay-per-view. They have another bad match. They mess up the finish. And then you decide, okay, well, let's have another rematch on SmackDown the following week. And apparently they screwed up the finish on that match as well. So to me, I don't know. If I see a guy having a horrible match with Sin Cara night after night after night, I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, man, you know, Sin Cara is no good. We need to bring in someone from Mexico. I go, why don't we put Sin Cara in there with Daniel Bryan, who we already have on the roster, who has already been shown can have a good match with the guy. And, you know, if you put Sin Cara in there with Averno, yes, he's going to go in there and he's going to do more lucha. The issue is you don't want him doing lucha. You want him to be able to do the American style. So why would you bring in a luchador? I mean, it's great to have a couple of good matches on TV or on pay-per-view with Averno and Sin Cara. But long-term, if you want him to watch U.S. style, he should be in there with Daniel Bryan or Tyson Kidd or even Jamie Noble. You know, somebody that can go in there and have a good match with him but also teach him the American style, and you've already got the guys on the roster. So this whole thing just is baffling to me.
Well, unless they make it where they actually start explaining the lights, which I'm not against the lights like a lot of people are. I think they should be, you know, lightened up some. But if they would just go out there and say that, you know, he's out, you know, some guys are in it to beat up people to get paid. Some people are in it for championships, but he's out there to fight the good fight for the kids and put on a athletic performance or something like that. And he just becomes that sort of, you know, pigeonholed sideshow on the show. That would be fine. And that would make sense for this too. But yeah, he should have been working with Daniel Bryan, Tyson Kidd, because they're not doing anything anyway.
And you know, the one other thing about this story before we head to the break is that Sin Cara is being billed as Triple H's first big signee in his new position of power. And, I mean, if anything proves that they want this guy to succeed because of that, this is it. You know, anybody else who you bring in and you want him to be a star and it's just not working, that's just the end of him. But here, they are so desperate for this guy not to fail because it's Triple H's first big project that now they're going to go all over the world and find guys to bring in to make him look good. And I just find that, at least they're going to keep trying with the guy. You know, they've given up on a million guys over the years, and here's the guy that they're not going to give up on, at least for the short term. Plus, they're paying him a lot of money. We'll talk more about this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live from Vegas on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here to talk all of the news in wrestling and mixed martial arts, here from Vegas. We are here in Vegas. We're going to talk UFC 130. I can't even speak this morning. UFC 130 here in a moment. But first off, any other final thoughts on the Averno to WWE story?
No, just going to be interesting. You know, it's if he is only in there for a quick period of time, like is, you know, very much possible. You know, so the mask comes off. He does get paid well for that to take place. And obviously he won't be getting paid poorly by WWE to do this job. But, you know, he goes from what he's one of the biggest, if not the biggest bad guy in the country. And, you know, to go up there for a quick job, possibly, and to come back, I wonder how that's going to affect the rest of his career in Mexico.
We're going to talk about some UFC now, but before we even get to UFC 130, the big story from the weekend is that Brock Lesnar did, in fact, get his surgery. He underwent surgery. He's obviously had some problems with diverticulitis, and it caused some serious problems there for a while, at least. You know, he had the one major bout about a year and a half ago, I believe, and it was real serious, as in, you know, he thought that he could die. And this second bout has not been quite as bad because, as he noted, he did a show with us last week on the website, which if you sign up, you can check out in the archives in our every segment cheap plug for the site. Talked about how this time he understood what symptoms to look for. And so when he started feeling bad, he immediately got on antibiotics, and when they didn't work, he had to pull out of his fight, his upcoming fight in Vancouver with Junior Dos Santos, which, of course, they built the entire season of Ultimate Fighter around, so that's a complete disaster. But he had to make a decision about what to do. And, you know, the last time when they approached him with surgery, he didn't want to do it. And he, I guess there was this feeling that, you know, this could end your career. I mean, you've got to have your intestine, like 12 inches of your intestine removed. This is a pretty big surgery. So he wanted to try to avoid that and make some changes to his diet and see if that solved the problem. So he made the changes. He claimed there had been a miracle healing. And he came back to action, and he got pretty much destroyed by Cain Velasquez, who got married, by the way, yesterday, everybody, in the middle of the UFC event. Not on the show, but elsewhere. So he got destroyed, and then in training for this fight, the symptoms came back. So he decided that he was going to get surgery. He underwent it 2 days ago at the Mayo Clinic, I believe. One full foot of his intestine removed, and I guess sewed back together. And they claim, his doctors claim, that he could be fighting again. And keep in mind, the first time he declined surgery because he did not want his career to end. Now, he got the surgery, and his doctor claimed it went well, it was a success, and he could be fighting again by early 2012. That's like 7 months from now. So that's pretty a cheery diagnosis there from his doctor. But he's currently on a liquid diet. He says he feels good. He is probably going to be losing a lot of weight here for a while as he sticks to his liquid diet. But once he can get back to training, he can presumably put that back on. And as Dana White said at the press conference yesterday, he also wants everyone to know that his new book, Death Clutch, is available in bookstores everywhere. So that's the latest on Brock. And do you think he's fighting again?
I think he is fighting again. Yeah, I guess it's good to say, though, early 2012, because it gives people something to look forward to, and it's a buzzing sort of thing. And maybe he can. He's going to drop a ton of weight. It is 12 inches of intestine, even though he couldn't get anybody better than the Mayo Clinic to do it, but, it's a hell of a thing, and he's not a young guy, and, he's got holes in his game he's got to fix, and it's just... It's possible. He's going to fight again. There's no way. I don't think that he doesn't fight again unless this thing flares up sometime in his recovery or something along the line that delays it even more or pushes everything back even more. But early 2012, I guess it's possible, but that just seems, I don't know. For me, it would seem fast. Then again, I'm not a maniac like Brock Lesnar.
What do you think of the Shane Carwin Junior Dos Santos fight that's coming up in Vancouver on June 11th? A lot of people thinking it's going to be a more fun, more exciting fight than the Brock Junior Dos Santos fight. What are you thinking as far as that match as opposed to the Brock fight?
The Ultimate Fighter show is kind of dead on arrival anyway, and for much as Dana White wants Tuesday night fights, why he just doesn't shelve the Ultimate Fighter idea and just have a show of Tuesday night fights, I don't think anybody would complain if it went away for a while. So, Lesnar going out of it doesn't hurt the season because that's pretty much been dead anyway. And it is just I don't know if it's a more interesting fight or anything like that, but I like it because if I couldn't get Brock, I want to see Carwin win this and then get Carwin and Velasquez in Houston because I just know how awesome that's going to be for Houston and how big of a deal they're going to make out of this. I mean, it's another shot over the bow at, young Latino fans that are going away from boxing and watching MMA, and that age is starting to shrink down where, boxing amongst Latino fans is now, staying older. And I think everything that could go around the possibility of Lesnar and Velasquez was going to be absolutely huge and awesome, and it could have been a stadium show. Because he's going to be out of this, I think Carwin's the next best bet because with all the media, with everything going around it, you want the possibility of huge knockouts. And I want to see a knockout so bad in that match just because of how big it should end up being. And it's not like it couldn't happen with Dos Santos either. I just think Carwin and Velasquez for that show is going to be the best thing. So I kind of want to see him actually win this fight with Dos Santos. Nothing against Dos Santos, but I'd like to see Carwin come back.
Did you watch the UFC last night, 130?
I did.
What were your thoughts on the show? Because we got a lot of mixed reactions. There were people that really did not like the event. I thought the show was fine. I didn't think it was great. There were some things on it that I liked. What were your thoughts?
Well, if you think about it, if Edgar and Maynard was on there, and people can say what they want as far as them being pay-per-view draws, but, you know, the fights are pretty good, and it was going to be a title fight, and it's, you know, it would have been the third one, and you look at that, and you have Nelson and Mir, which on paper you're happy about, and you have Rampage and Hamill, which on paper you'd be happy about. The problem with those fights is, you know, none of the four wanted to really sell the fight. I mean, well, Nelson did, but and Hamill really couldn't. But, you know, the two igniters in all of this, Rampage and Mir, couldn't sell them. But when you looked at the stuff on paper and then had Brian stand in Santiago, it wasn't a bad show. And the reality was, it was not a bad show. It's when you have pay-per-views every month, you get shows like this. They can't always be all, you know, just because it's not going to get a million buys doesn't mean it's a failure. I mean, it pretty much delivered. You had exciting ground action. You had a big knockout. I mean, Stefan Struve should have a job in the UFC forever, just because there's always the possibility he's going to get knocked out, and at 6'11", it's always going to look crazy when he falls. And, you know, again, obviously Rampage and Hamill wasn't all that great, and Mir and Nelson was incredibly one-sided. But with that said, I didn't think it was a bad night from top to bottom.
Well, I think one of the things is those of you that watch this show on TV, you actually lucked out by not seeing the prelims. Sometimes when you miss the prelims, it sucks to be you because there's good stuff on the undercard. But the first three fights on this show, I'm not even going to lie, I was so bored after the third fight that I left and got ice cream and missed
the challengers level prelim type fights.
They were slightly above challengers, but actually I can't even say that, because sometimes challengers level fights are like local guys that don't really know what they're doing, and they're young and crazy, and they go out there and they swing wildly and they get knockouts and they get choked out and that sort of thing. This was like, you know, good fighters that went out there and just had decision after decision after decision. And as a result, I missed Tim Bosch and Kendall Grove eating my ice cream. And as it turns out, that was a boring fight too. So I did come back in time for the Miguel Torres-Demetrius Johnson fight, which was on Spike TV. And that was actually a great fight. I think I would have given that the Fight of the Night award. Just a back-and-forth battle. Two little guys. Demetrius Johnson is you know, when I see fighters that are shorter than I am, that's saying something. And he's like two heads shorter than I am. He's like Rey Mysterio size. He weighs significantly less. He probably weighs 40 pounds less than Rey Mysterio. Just a tiny little bugger. And he went out there with Miguel Torres, and they just had a great battle. They grappled on the ground, they did sweeps, they did reversals, there were submission attempts, back and forth. It was a really close fight. I had it for Torres. I thought Torres won the first two rounds, and I gave the third round to Johnson. I think Dave gave the first round to Johnson, the first two rounds to Johnson, the third round to Torres. It was close enough that it doesn't matter. It was, you know, it sucks that Torres didn't win, because he didn't really deserve to lose this fight. It probably should have just been a draw. But they had a heck of a battle, and it was fun. So I enjoyed this fight a lot.
Yeah, I'll do the cop-out. I actually had it a draw because I had the first round even. I that was as close.
That's
to...
That's not a cop-out. That's probably the best score that anyone could have given this fight.
But, you know, I had, like, thoughts going back to, like, Bushido with the Biscotti-Azevedo fight, which was the first ground fight for me that I ever saw, which was like, you know what? You show that fight to somebody who complains about two guys humping in MMA on the ground, and they'll completely change their mind forever. And, I mean, this was like that. I don't know, because the feed crapped out for the post-fight press conference, so I don't know why Stan and Santiago got this over Johnson and Torres, other than they wanted to give Brian Stan an extra $70,000, which I'm cool with, but I'm really surprised this wasn't the fight of the night.
Well, when people asked Dana about it after the show, he was like, oh yeah, it could have been that fight. I mean, he made it pretty clear that it was kind of like, they had to make a decision, they made a decision on one. I mean, they could have given a bonus to both fights, but this is not a show that's going to do... I'll be surprised if it does 300,000 buys. This show did not do well. I've never been to the MGM and seen it tarped off like this. Apparently it has for recent shows, but I mean, you know, I've never been to an event, because I usually go to just the big ones, and this was not a big one. But, you know, to see the MGM tarped off and only 12,000 people in the building, that was something else. But we're going to get into this more after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. No. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for all the news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have daily news updates. We have TV show reviews, news, and a lot of radio shows. If you listen to this show every week, and it's the only opportunity you get to hear all of this talk, and you want more, say you've got a long commute, say you go to work and work just drives you nuts and you want stuff to listen to, maybe you go to the gym or the subway. We hear a lot of people on the subway listening to the shows. The place to go is Observer.com, WrestlingObserver.com. We have, if you go to the right-hand side of the page and scroll down, there's a listing of our latest three free radio shows. Check them out, and if you like what you hear, sign up. As noted, you get one free show a week if you're listening to this right now on Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 92. If you sign up, we do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. And on top of that, if you sign up today, you not only get all the new shows that we do, but you can go to the archives and listen to every show we have ever done. And that's dating back to the middle of 2005. There are thousands and thousands of hours of audio, tens of thousands of hours of audio. If you signed up for a month, which is $10.99, you literally could not go through every show that we have on the website. It would be impossible. If you listen to shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you cannot listen to all these shows. Had some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling and mixed martial arts. We had Brock Lesnar on this past week, Ric Flair, Bruno Sammartino, Daniel Bryan. Mike, help me out here.
I mean, got tons of people. Lance Russell has been on. I mean, just
Lance Storm every week.
Oh, Lance Storm everywhere. Are you talking about just last week or in general with this website? I mean, Jesus, there are enough interviews, again, like you said. I mean, Bruno Sammartino being on several times should be enough. That's not enough. Brock Lesnar last week. How many interviews does Brock Lesnar do? Not many. He does them with you.
Paul Heyman. That
Jim
was a
Cornette.
Great show, by the way. Paul Heyman. So anyway, everybody, check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. All you do is go up there, and there's a lot of stuff that you can't see unless you subscribe. So subscribe and then listen to all the shows. Dave and I were up last two nights in a row, here live from Vegas doing shows, talking about UFC, mixed martial arts. We talked about a lot of wrestling and TNA as well. So all the scoops, WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out. Back to the UFC show here. If any fighters are listening right now, maybe you could drop us a line, or maybe anybody that competes. I was thinking about when you said it was a cop-out for the Torres-Johnson fight to call that fight a draw. And I am a proponent of draws in fights that I think are even. And some people are always like, oh, nobody wants to see a draw. The fans don't want draws. The fighters don't want draws. And I always think, really, the fighters don't want draws? Because, I mean, I've competed in things here and there. And let's say that I'm in a grappling competition with somebody. And we go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and it's completely even. I don't want someone deciding that I lost an even fight just so we don't have a draw.
Yeah,
you know?
That's not even the even fight. I mean, fighters don't like draws when they honestly think they won. That's it.
Yeah. What is poor Miguel Torres thinking today that he lost instead of being given a draw for that fight? You know, that's close to as even a fight as you can have. You know, when every single round, pretty much, people argue who won that round, that's an even fight. So now here we are today, you know, great for Demetrius Johnson. He has a win over Miguel Torres. But poor Miguel Torres, I mean, he did as much as you possibly could. I thought he won. Other people thought he won. But there had to be a decision because they don't like draws. I mean, obviously there are draws here and there. The Edgar Maynard fight ended up being a majority draw, I believe. But, you know, this fight, I'm sure that that Miguel Torres would not be unhappy today if it turned out yesterday that he fought to a draw.
And that's the whole thing, too, the problem with boxing and wrestling. If you want to try to institute for those who want to change the scoring around and cut it to maybe a 1-5 or, you know, type of thing instead of a 10-point must or add in half-point scoring, they can't get a lot of this stuff right because there's pressure on them to not give 10-8 rounds, to give 10-7 rounds. There's pressure on them to not give 10-10 rounds, but the fact is they happen, and especially in MMA when you only have, you know, 15 minutes. I mean, three rounds, sometimes it's going to be an even fight. I mean, you know, it's just that's going to happen sometimes. It's not a lot of time, so I just, you know, it's to me that just shows another flaw in trying to change this. It's not get better judges in there, get more competent, more, you know, regular judges in there who actually understand what's going on, and because it's okay to have draws, and this was a perfect example of it.
Brian Stan and Jorge Santiago was up next. Brian Stan, a former war hero, like a legit war hero, fighting here on Memorial Day. And he went in there with Jorge Santiago, heck of a career. A lot of wins largely in Japan, but came over here, and a lot of people thought that he was going to beat Brian Stan. I actually had predicted Santiago, but as the days wore on, and I thought, you know, this is Brian Stan. He is fighting on Memorial Day weekend. He ain't losing this fight, and he didn't. And in fact, you know, for people like me that have watched Brian Stan dating back to his WEC days, where, I mean, admittedly, you know, he's been on our show as well. He's in the archives. You know, he admitted, I was no good. You know, I was there, I was in the military, and I was fighting on the side. And I would fight, and I would go back. And I never really went full-time into fighting, and, I was successful. But there was a lot of pressure put on me to be an American hero, and I really wasn't all that good. But he's training full-time now with Greg Jackson's camp. And, you know, I used to always talk about, in pro wrestling, John Morrison and Nigel McGuinness, Desmond Wolfe, were the two guys that, when I first saw them, when they just started, I thought, these men will never be good, because it's impossible. They are so bad that they cannot possibly ever become good. And they both became great, especially Nigel McGuinness. Good God almighty, that guy became great. But Brian Stan is like the MMA version of that. When he was fighting in WEC at the beginning, it was like, wow, you know, this guy is it's going to be a long time, if ever, before he's any good. And he has become quite great. And he went in there and he destroyed Jorge Santiago. You know, there were tons of USA chants throughout the fight and afterwards as well, poor Jorge. But, you know, he knocked him out, and Brian Stan was just like a brick wall in there. You know, Jorge couldn't do a thing, and it was a real fun fight, a real great live atmosphere. And Brian Stan, I think, pretty much, you know, granted, nobody watched this show, but among the people that did, he became a real big star.
So, well, that's the thing with him. I mean, from his WEC days, I mean, he was strong, but now he's powerful. He had confidence in himself before, but now it just exudes out. I mean, he was just aggressive, moving forward. Santiago, he was swearing up and down as soon as the bell rang that Santiago couldn't hurt him, and Santiago couldn't, and he kept him going back, and just a great performance. And again, it's just, they're building a new Captain America here with Brian Stan. And again, people, you know, he's still, I think, somewhat off from facing Anderson Silva, and, you know, and I hope that is a little bit further off. But with that said, you know, if he ends up beating Anderson Silva, can you imagine what could actually, I mean, Dana White will build a statue to him, if that's possible. I mean, the way his confidence, the way he publicly speaks, the book he has got out, the story, everything. I mean, he's a great representation for the UFC, and, you know, the way he's been fighting and looking that impressive and the way he's been looking is just, it's really good for him and really good for the UFC.
We had Thiago Alves and Rick Story. And the story of this fight, so to speak, was Rick Story taking Alves down 1,000 times. And Alves just, I mean, Story, you know, Alves should have been able to stop these takedowns, to be quite honest with you. But he couldn't. And he was taken down over and over and over and over again. He lost two rounds. Third round, he hit a hard knee and rocked Rick Story. But it was not enough to end the fight. And thus, he lost 29-28 on all the scorecards. And, you know, it was a big win for Rick Story. The thing, I talked about this last night, I've talked about this a million times. The story of this fight was takedowns and wrestling, and afterwards at the press conference, people were like, man, are we going to maybe see Rick Story versus John Fitch? And I thought, no, I do not ever want to see that fight. But, you know, people were like, well, maybe, you know, he's the kind of guy that can stop Fitch's wrestling. And I'm like, okay, then what? I don't want to see that fight. Let's just put it that way. I do not want to see Rick Story against John Fitch. But that's what they were talking about, so I guess we'll see.
Why? Why? This is not amateur wrestling. Why? Nobody wants to see that fight. Please, 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 please. Although Story was really impressive. And I don't know. I know Alves had said after the fight, I guess he had gotten his teeth knocked through his mouthpiece, but was there anything said after the fight of why you know, anything with him there was an issue with not being able just to, he was, I mean, I'm really stunned the way Story looked. I think it was his last fight or two fights ago, where he was beaten. Was it in Australia where he got beaten by the British guy?
I'd have to go back and look through this whole thing here, but yes, I believe that's
true.
Yeah,
I forget. He ended up going out to lose his next fight. He didn't look impressive after that, so I was really surprised at how good Story looked.
Yeah, it was actually, Story had his tooth put through his mouthpiece, which, actually, I saw that in pro wrestling, a Chris Hero Akira Tozawa match, where Hero hit him with an elbow so hard that Tozawa's teeth, his tooth ended up going through his mouthpiece. So it was John Hathaway in, actually, that was all the way back in 2009, June of 2009, so that was two full years ago, but,
injury. Things skip around.
Yeah, so, that was the deal. It was a good performance by Rick Story, but not the most exciting fight I've ever seen in the world. Stefan Struve and Travis Brown. I thought Struve was going to win this fight. I was very wrong. Travis Brown came in, looked good, looked like a young Fedor, physically, not necessarily the way he fought, but he threw a Superman punch. Struve was walking into the Superman punch. The punch connected, and Struve toppled like a great oak. Fell to the ground and was knocked unconscious. A highlight reel knockout for Travis Brown here, and a big win.
Oh God, absolutely! And I thought Struve was going to win the fight, and he really was winning the fight up until that Superman punch. I mean, he did look really good. He was throwing good, accurate punches and kicks, and was doing some damage. But again, that the Superman punch and being on ESPN this morning, every time Struve has been knocked out, and again, it's not his fault. He's 6'11", but it's like Sen Schill when he would get knocked out in K1. It just makes for such a highlight reel looking moment. It's unbelievable.
Roy Nelson and Frank Mir. This to me was the real main event of the show. I could talk about this for hours, and so it's going to be kind of interesting here to try and get it done in like a minute. We'll have to talk more about this later on. In fact, let's talk about this more later. Let's move on to Quentin Jackson and Matt Hamill, because good God, do I have a lot of things to say about Frank Mir and Roy Nelson. Jackson and Hamill was fine. I saw Jackson at the weigh-in, and he looked like he was having a really unhappy day. I figured he cut too much weight. I thought it might affect him during the fight, and it did. He got tired in the third round, but... Matt Hamill apparently thought he was going to go in there and out-wrestle Quentin Jackson. And Quentin Jackson was doing interviews after the show at the press conference, and he was, essentially at this point, he was scoffing. He was like, I'm a wrestler. Wrestling is my base. You thought you were going to come in here and take me down over and over again? And that's exactly what did not happen. Hamill went in there, he tried a shot, he missed, and, as soon as he didn't get that first shot on Jackson, it was like, his face fell.
Well, he tried to do it from halfway across the ring, too, which didn't help.
Terrible setup. It was just, as soon as he couldn't get that first takedown, it was like he went, huh, I can't take this man down. That ruins my entire game plan. And it ruined his entire game plan. Quentin beat him. I mean, he just beat him up for three rounds. Just completely outclassed him on the feet. Hamill had nothing. Hamill didn't get a single takedown in the entire fight. And Jackson won the decision. Not the most exciting fight in the world, but I didn't think it was terrible because it was one dude just completely outclassing the other. But there you go. That's your main event.
Oh, Hamill, 0 for 16 on the takedown. 0 for
Pretty 16. Pretty much. 0 for 16, everybody. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk more about this. And in the hour two, we'll talk about Mir and Nelson, the real main event of the weekend. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have a short segment here, but Mike, I thought I would get your thoughts on this. Rampage Jackson won. Is he in line for a title shot against Bones Jones?
He's going to have to be. because who else is there? I mean, you got Phil Davis fighting Rashad Evans, so that's going to take him out of out of that. Jones is out right now. The only other guy you got is Machida, and you could do Machida in Rampage again, saying, because Rampage didn't think he won the fight afterwards, and most people, I think, probably thought Machida did. So it's like, what else are you going to do? I mean, there's only a couple guys in the mix right now, and, unless you're going to try to bump somebody else up in there. I mean, what else are you really supposed to do? He probably is going to end up with the shot.
Well, Dana last night did initially.
Hopefully he won't be out of breath in the third round again.
Yeah, yeah. Dana initially said that it was probably going to be Jackson getting the shot. Later on, he didn't seem so confident that it was going to be Jackson getting the shot. I don't know. Dana changes his mind. He changes his mind all the time. That's the issue. But there has also been talk that they may have Bones Jones wait, and if Rashad Evans wins his fight, doing that fight next. That's also a possibility. So they got a lot of different ways they can go, and it's been a horrible year for UFC in terms of guys getting injured, guys pulling out of fights. You know, we'll talk about this after the break, because there were people talking this weekend about what all of this meant, and I want to get your thoughts on the idea. You know, obviously fighting too much is a bad idea, but there's a lot of talk right now that guys are just constantly overtrained, and that's why we're getting injuries. You know, it's one thing to be fighting all the time and getting hurt, but these people are getting hurt all the time in training, which suggests overtraining. So we're going to get your thoughts on that when we come back from the break. And then when we got some time in hour two, we're going to talk about the greatest fight of the weekend. Not really the greatest fight, but it was a slobber knocker. We'll talk about that after the break, hourly break, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of stuff to talk about today. We spent the first hour talking about some news, UFC 130. We're going to talk about the greatest fight of all time coming up here in just a moment, the Roy Nelson-Frank Mir slobber knocker battle of the ages last night. But here in this segment, we've only got a couple of minutes, so Mike wanted me to talk a little bit about ice cream. I'll talk about that, and then some email questions as well. Mike, I had Haagen-Dazs yesterday during that extremely boring fight on Spike TV with the Spider, Kendall Grove, who did lose the decision, by the way, after being taken down 1,000 times.
Now, what flavor was it? Because I actually took Avery to the circus yesterday. Before I took him to his very first minor league baseball game and fireworks exhibition, and I actually had fat-free, sugar-free fudge ripple ice cream that didn't actually suck, being fat-free and sugar-free.
I had, it was not fat-free, nor was it sugar-free. It was high in fat and sugar, and it was mint chocolate chip ice cream. And ironically, let me add, since you mentioned that, I also went to the circus this weekend. I went to Cirque du Soleil. My wife actually went to two. I went to the Beatles show. She went to the Beatles and O. And she went to O with everyone's favorite, Dr. Lucha Steve Sims, who appears on our shows on Wednesday to talk about, of all things, Lucha. And I will give everyone a scoop here on this coming Wednesday's show with Dr. Lucha. He is going to tell the world why he hated O with a passion. He hated this show.
Wow.
So that's a tease for everybody. I figured there were not enough little fellas in masks doing flips. That's why he didn't like O. Too many dudes on the flying trapeze.
Maybe he's just anti-Quebec and anything that comes from there. It's possible.
Well, it's very possible. Now, we're already out of time, so I don't have time to even read this email. But he's basically asking, why don't the agents tell Wade Barrett to change his finisher? The wasteland doesn't look painful at all. Well,
right.
I will tell this man, Ron, that emailed this, that in fact, while it does not look painful, he has injured at least two guys with that move. So there you go, which is actually another good reason to change that finisher before he kills more men. All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. Be back in just a moment, and we'll talk the best fight I saw all weekend. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, live from Las Vegas. I am down here in Vegas doing this show. As we talk about UFC 130, all of the news in wrestling and mixed martial arts, I am joined, as I am every week, by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, last night, during the press conference, Dana White told us how much he disliked the Frank Mir Roy Nelson fight. He hated that fight. And I sat there, and Dave sat there, and other people sat there, and we were just like, how did you hate that fight? That fight is like everything great about mixed martial arts. Well, I shouldn't say everything great. But, I mean, you know, mixed martial arts is, sports and entertainment. You know, you get Miguel Torres and Demetrius Johnson in a sporting contest, and then you get these two big guys just trying to beat the crap out of each other. And that's what this was. They both weighed 260, a very different 260. Mirror was huge and jacked up, and Nelson was big and fat. And they went in there, and despite being friends, let me tell you something, everybody. I was cage side for this fight. I was two rows back from the cage, so there was like one row of people in front of me, and then there was my row. And at the beginning of this fight, these men came out, and there was like, I don't want to call it a tackle spot, but one dude grabbed the other, and he, you know, I think it was Mir ran Nelson into the cage, or maybe it was vice versa, but, you know, as they used to say in pro wrestling, the ring moved 5 feet. And they hit that cage so hard that, you know, there was a man on a little box. They had a little stool right outside the octagon. And this old guy, is standing on this stool with this giant camera on his shoulder. And I thought that these guys were going to hit the cage, and the cage was going to hit the old guy. And the old guy, like Lillian Garcia and Charlie Haas, was going to fly into about the second row and kill me. I really thought this was going to happen. The point of this is, Dana was unhappy that these two guys came out here and they were tired by the third round. And to me, it was like, you got Frank Mir at 260 pounds. You've got Roy Nelson, who's big and fat and was sick for an entire week. What did you think was going to happen in round three? You really thought they were still going to be going like Demetrius Johnson, who should be in the 125-pound division, and Miguel Torres? Did you really think that? Because I didn't think that. You know, and one of the reasons they got tired was not just because it's two dudes that are just out there and they're out of shape and they're getting tired. These dudes were battling. These guys were fighting. You know, Mir was in there trying to beat the crap out of Roy Nelson. Roy Nelson was like the best babyface you ever saw. He got knocked down, or he got taken down. He got slammed like a dozen times in this fight. And that's a big fat guy getting slammed. And he got slammed down, and Mir, you know, many years ago they had a grappling battle, and Nelson out-wrestled and tapped out Frank Mir. And I think that Mir really wanted to get his win back, because Mir would slam him, he'd start working to pass the guard. The problem is, you know, even completely exhausted, Roy Nelson would tap out everybody listening to this right now. And he's a real tough guy, and he's got a lot of heart. And Mir would go to pass the guard, and Nelson would fight back to his feet. And he'd get back to his feet, and everyone would go, yay! And then they'd fight for a little while, and he'd take this hard knee, and then he hit this huge overhand right to Mir's jaw, and then Mir would take him back down, and he'd go to pass the guard. And Nelson would fight to his feet, and everyone would go, yay! And this went on over and over again for three rounds. And, you know, third round was a 10-8 round, let's be honest. Mir just destroyed him. But Nelson wouldn't quit, and he just kept coming, he kept getting up. And Mir couldn't tap him, he couldn't beat him, and he won via decision. But, you know, I it was the old Tank Abbott thing. Went to the press conference afterwards, there's Roy Nelson, drinking an energy drink. Where's Frank Mir? In the hospital, with a broken jaw. So, there you go. You know, Dana was real down on these guys, but I enjoyed the spectacle of this fight. And Mike, what did you think?
Because Dana doesn't like Roy Nelson. He likes Kimbo more than Roy. He hates, as long as Josh Barnett and Roy Nelson are under contract, I don't think he's ever going to truly be happy. It's not like he's ever going to truly be happy anyway. But, Nelson was completely gassed out and everything. But, I mean, Christ, Mir landed 80% of his shots. He was landing knees right off the bat in the first round, and that never let up. I mean, in a way, you could argue the second and third round were both 10-8 rounds, for as much as Mir dominated the second round, too. Having Roy Nelson is great, and yeah, maybe he should lose some weight, but the thought of him competing at 205 is just completely stupid to me. It makes no sense whatsoever, and the fact is, it doesn't matter how he looks. He's a bad dude. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu. He's still a bad, bad man and survived a lot of those shots when he's being drilled on the ground. I mean, he's got a chin and a hard head, and he's interesting looking, and he's fun, and people like hearing him talk. Yeah, I wouldn't be smacking Roy Nelson around for his performance in this fight. I was surprised how the worm had turned by the end of at least the broadcast, where it's, you know, Taha, it's funny, he's coming out to fat by Radal Yankovic, but then by the end of it, oh God, you know, he should really get down to 205, and, you know, this is why he's so out of breath and all that stuff. I mean, Frank Mir is still no joke. So I don't know what it is with Dana White and Roy Nelson outside of the way Roy Nelson actually physically looks, but having Roy Nelson on my roster is, you know, they always talk about having 5 million guys, and he always talks about having these things from around the world, and he wants an event every single day of the week, you know, basically, and all this stuff. But how do they stand out? They stand out by being like Roy Nelson, who are unique and good.
Yeah, Roy Nelson, I mean, Dana was, there were a lot of people, I know Joe Rogan buried Roy Nelson on TV and said he should drop down to 205, and the guy's 260, and he's not young. You know, dropping down to 205 is not the easiest task in the world, and Dana even said, you know, getting to 205 would be like a complete full lifestyle change, and how about he just starts at 240, you know?
Yeah.
How about he loses 20 pounds? And, you know, he's right. But the heavyweight division is difficult in the sense that, yeah, if you drop down to 240, it's all well and good, but you're still going to be facing men that are 265 pounds. And Nelson got destroyed in this fight. But if Nelson was, in fact, sick leading up to this fight, you know, it was kind of funny because you look at both guys and it's like, Mir is this big jacked-up guy, and Nelson's this big fat guy. But really, when the fight started, the question was, how soon is Frank Mir going to get tired? You know, I thought Frank Mir was going to get tired before Roy Nelson. Because Nelson is big and fat, but the guy can go when he's in Roy Nelson shape. And Mir is, you know, every time Mir has been heavy, he's gassed out if he hasn't finished the fight in the first round. And this went three rounds. So, you know, it could have, in a different universe, Roy Nelson could have won this fight. I thought Roy was going to win. But in this universe, he did not. And whatever it was that resulted in him having this performance, he's got to make a change. You know, and maybe it is dropping down to 240. I don't know. But Dana's got a meeting with him this week, and I think he's going to basically tell him, you either get to 240 or you're done. And I expect that to happen, and I guess we'll see. But I enjoyed the fight.
Yeah, I mean, it was what it was, dude. It was one of those fun, completely one-sided fights, but it was still a fun fight. And again, I wouldn't be as upset with them for being gassed out in the third round, especially Roy Nelson, when he had Rampage doing it in the third round, and he's supposed to be a title contender, and I'd still be upset. You know, they have their Twitter names, you know, Hammer UFC against Rampage for real, and, you know, they have that stuff. But, I mean, Mir and Nelson should have been the main event. They should have been out there driving it home, selling it harder, with them not hating each other, just them running their mouth to get people involved. And Quentin Jackson obviously was not into this fight. You know, he got it because they promised Hamill a top guy, and some things passed him by, and he ended up getting a top guy and didn't hold up against him. And even though it wasn't going to be all that great of a fight, no one thought, the fact that no one hyped up anything when he came to this card is incredibly disappointing. And, you know, especially from Jackson's end, too. He looked good on the Craig Ferguson show on CBS on Monday night. But outside of that, I mean, he didn't drive home anything when he came to this, and him getting tired afterwards. I know he blamed it on, you know, dropping an elbow and fracturing his wrist in Japan on New Year's Eve or whatever that deal was. But, you know, still, I mean, people were booing afterwards. In a way, they kind of had the right to. I mean, even as dominant as he was and as good as he looked in a lot of ways, throwing the knees and everything, I mean, it's just very disappointing in going out there and selling this fight and his reaction afterward.
We'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk more about this. We got some pro wrestling news as well. Lots of stuff going on. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next 45 minutes or so. Live from Vegas, here on Sports Byline USA, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 92, live on the internet, streaming at WrestlingObserver.com, and if you happen to have a cell phone, which I presume most of you do, if you've got a smartphone, iPhone, iPad, I think the Android, BlackBerry, there's an app called the TuneIn Radio app. And it's a free download from the App Store for most phones. And if you download that app and go to Sports Byline USA, you can listen to this show live on your phone. So if you're in the car and say you don't have a Sirius satellite radio or a local affiliate, and you have one of those deals where you can plug your phone in your car, the auxiliary cable, you can use the TuneIn Radio app to listen to this show live every Sunday afternoon at 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. So check it out, the TuneIn Radio app. And, of course, the show always streams on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com as well. We've been talking about UFC and pro wrestling here. Some Strikeforce news very quickly. It is official for the June 30th show. Fedor and Dan Henderson, 220 pounds, a catchweight fight. Henderson's title is not on the line. Taking place near Chicago, Illinois. It will be a Strikeforce on Showtime event. It will not be a pay-per-view. And, Mike, what do you think about this fight?
Well, is it July 30th?
July, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay, you know, it's been rumored for a while, and there's a handful of fights, not even a handful of fights that you could put together, and they've already got the heavyweight tournament going on as it is, so what other fights can they really hype up and make some money on? Well, it's Gina Carano, who they have fighting on June 18th, and then it's this Henderson-Fedor fight, which is going to be fought at 220. It's been hinted at and talked about for a while now, and it makes the most sense, and it's, you know, again, in another time, this was a pay-per-view main event, but it's going to be on Showtime, so again, good on the subscribers for Showtime.
They also announced that all of the future Strikeforce Challengers events, which are going to have real undercards from this point forward, they're not going to just have local guys fighting for very little money. Those undercards will all be airing on HDNet. Actually, I shouldn't say that. The undercard of this next event is going to be airing on HDNet. I guess we'll see what other future events end up airing on HDNet. But all of the Challengers shows, there's one last Challengers show that's taking place in Kent, Washington, and right down the road from my house. That's coming up in June. And after that, all future Challengers shows will be at the Pearl at the Palms, the casino here in Vegas, the Palms Casino. And it's an upgrade, that's for sure. And we'll see how that goes.
Hey, why not? I mean, at least you can cut costs that way. Everything, you know, based out of Vegas anyway, have them right there. It makes sense. It's like when the Ultimate Fighter finale is being there too. I mean, it's not a big place or anything like that. And, you know, again, the only problem you'll have with it is burning out the Las Vegas crowd even more, you know, instead of being able to bounce it around where you may be able to sell some tickets or something like that. But again, if they have this and then, you know, Dana gets his dream of having a Tuesday night fights type show or a Friday night fights type show, then that can, you know, take the place of touring around a little bit.
Any thoughts on the Macho Man a week after everything went down? We talked about it a lot on last week's show, but it's now been another week, and are you surprised by the coverage? Any other new thoughts on this story?
I'm just still, you know, as we were talking about on Sunday, it's, you know, it's amazing because it's sunk in for me the same way it's sunk in for everybody else that I think there were a lot of us, not that we meant to take Randy Savage for granted, but because he wasn't in the eye, we didn't hear about him all the time. And he was just always there doing such awesome things and such memorable things. It just, I'm really surprised at how much it's sunk in for everybody. It may have sunk in for Vince McMahon, who did the article for Time Magazine. And I think it really did kind of, I think, sink in for everyone that how big of a loss this is as far as everything that he accomplished in his career. And again, it just, the media coverage was staggering. The traffic we got to our site was absolutely amazing. And it's just watching the Nationals game on Friday night where they have the presidential races, you know, which is like the sausage races in Milwaukee and everything, where they have presidents, oversized novelty-headed presidents running around during the seventh inning stretch. Well, one of them had the Macho Man's hat, glasses, a little bit of fringe on, and a replica world title belt. And it was just, again, amazing how much this has crossed over with being a big deal to people, and amazing how many people know him.
Yeah, it was a big deal. You know that Roy Nelson wanted to come out to the Macho Man's theme, and Dana said no go.
That's too bad, too, because Pomp and Circumstance, it's not like it's a song that you have to pay royalties on or anything like that, and it would have been just something awesome, and that would have actually been very awesome.
So the Time Magazine article, you know, Time Magazine, they've got a subscription area as well, and they tease that, you know, they basically give you, like, a paragraph, and you got to subscribe to read more. And I was like, man, Vince McMahon wrote something about Randy Savage. I wonder what he wrote. So, of course, I searched it out, and I found it, and he didn't say much. You know, they gave away a free paragraph, and the entire thing was maybe a paragraph and a half. He basically said Macho Man was a big star. He knew how to be a larger-than-life character. I mean, it really, quite frankly, there was almost nothing to it. I mean, it was nice, but, you know, they had a video for him. They had a video for him on Raw, very nice video, and most likely he's going to be going to the Hall of Fame next year in Miami. I know they've already started putting out Macho Man memorabilia and this and that. So, you know, it's always a very interesting deal because there was there were a lot of problems between Macho and Vince, and now Macho is no longer with us, and I think I don't know what Vince is doing, you know? Some people were thought it was really cool what he did with Time. Other people read it and thought, yeah, wow, what a nice thing for Vince to say in a rather sarcastic manner because it was almost nothing. So, I don't know. We'll see next year, Hall of Fame. Who would you have induct him? Would you have Lanny Poffo do it? Because Randy is, I mean, he would be the main eventer, one would think, in Miami. And, you know, God bless Lanny. He's been on our show. He's a real nice guy. But main eventing the Hall of Fame, I don't know.
Yeah, if it wasn't a TV event and all that stuff, yeah, definitely, of course, have Lanny Poffo do it. With that said,
Lanny could do the induction and someone else could accept. I guess you could do that as well.
Well, that's the thing. And who inducts him anyway? I mean, you could say Jerry Lawler for the Memphis stuff, but it's something that doesn't reach to anybody. I mean, it would have to be somebody from that era. It's not Vince himself. It would not fall over shock if Vince did it.
I would fall over shock.
Really? I don't know. I don't know. There's all the rumors and everything that's happened and everything like that. But, yeah, there's, you know, Vince could be looking at this as partly his mortality, too, of a guy where, you know, at the peak of his promotional, you know, building and everything, and there's a guy gone. Obviously, they're selling merchandise, so there's money to be made out of the deal and stuff like that. It's just, I don't know. Again, very interesting how all that's going to happen, too. But, you know, Lawler said it on Monday night when he said, you know, whether he's in or not, this is a Hall of Famer. So I think he definitely goes in. It'd be interesting to see, much like Coco Beware went in, if Lanny Poffo just doesn't go in they can make up some reason that Leaping Lanny can go in, or they just bring in the whole Poffo clan.
They could do the whole Poffo clan. I see Randy is just going in as Randy, though. You know, that seems to be the feeling that he's going to be going in this year, and it'll be interesting to see how they do it. And whole thing's just really interesting. The Over the Limit pay-per-view, they had a graphic for Randy, but no video or anything like that. And did you get a chance to see that show?
I did, and it was. I liked Chris Yorton, I liked Cole Lawler, but everything leading up to that was disappointing. And, you know, I was saying, you know, okay, it's worth the $55 the way this thing is going. And then the main event ends up being an angle to build Raw on Monday night for all intents and purposes. And it was, you know, really kind of goofy the way they did that. So it was too bad they couldn't continue the momentum I thought they had after those two matches.
I was there live, and so I had fun. I always have fun at live shows actually, I did have fun for the first three prelims at UFC. But in general, you know, going to a live event is a lot of fun. So we had a real good crowd in Seattle. You know, not a big crowd. The crowd, I mean, the numbers were disappointing, but the crowd that was there really had a good time. And they were into it. There was, you know, great heat up and down, except for a couple of matches. Nobody cared about the Sin Cara Chavo match. Nobody cared about the women. And the main event, Miz and Cena, people just, like, didn't know what the heck was going on. And there were boring chants and chants about this is supposed to be wrestling. But overall, I mean, you know, the Christian Orton match was awesome. That was an awesome match. And the building was going nuts for all the near falls there at the end. I thought that, I presume it was Christian. Because you know, you see this in Christian matches more than you see in Orton matches, these matches playing into each other. But he designed a match that totally played off their first SmackDown match, or whoever put it together. And it was awesome. And on SmackDown, they obviously took Christian out of the title picture for the time being. But I think that's just another step. I mean, I hope it's another step in the storyline, presumably leading to Christian turning heel. But I really thought they had a great pay-per-view match. And I don't see how, if you saw that match, you could say the pay-per-view was bad. You know, you would give it a thumbs in the middle or call it average.
Yeah.
But a match that good on that show is just like, that was worth the money.
I said, yeah, was it worth 55? You know, it's like, you know, by today's standards, actually it was, you know, because it was probably, it's one of the best American matches this year, and probably the best WWE match this year, arguably at least. So, I mean, it's really no complaints about that. And I actually hope that Christian goes into a feud with somebody else before he finally flips and goes crazy. If they're serious about re-pushing DiBiase, putting him over and, you know, before he finally goes nuts and turns dirty would, I think, be a good idea.
I wonder if they're even going to do that because, you know, obviously there'd been the talk of turning Christian heel, but when I watched that match, I mean, he was so beloved. And I guess really historically the best heels are the ones that you loved the most when they turned and vice versa. The best baby faces were the most hated heels. So I guess it would work, but man, he was loved in Seattle. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We want to talk a little bit more about WWE. Then we've got some emails to get into here today. Try to get into them every week. Apologize if you send emails and they don't get read. But show starts. We want to do a lot of emails. Get talking about wrestling. Next thing you know, the show's over. But we'll do our best to get into some of them here. Mike, the Raw show on Monday. The one thing I got out of the pay-per-view, I've been talking about Miz for months now, and this poor guy, you know, I have nothing against Miz, personally. I just feel bad for the guy because I shouldn't say I've never seen, because I've seen Jack Swagger and Rey Mysterio and others, but for a guy that they really want to be something, I don't know if I've ever seen, actually, now that I think about it, a guy who they pushed as poorly as Miz. You know, they didn't want Rey to get over. You know, when the idea was made to put the title on Rey Mysterio the first time, That was like a battle with Vince McMahon and the creative team. Vince did not want Rey as champion. And the creative team and the other guys, they pushed and 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 they pushed. And finally Vince said, fine, but he's losing the title soon. And like every time there was a new TV after Rey won the belt, Vince would remind the creative team, you know Rey's losing the belt here soon, right? And it was like, I mean, he did not want him as champion. Jack Swagger, I mean, I don't know what the deal is with Jack Swagger, but I mean, it was clear that they didn't want him to be champion because they booked him like a complete fool. Miz is like a guy they want over. But at the pay-per-view on Sunday, it was like he beat Cena and it was him and Alex Riley double teaming. Two men beat Cena. They beat him. 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 And then finally Cena makes one big comeback. Puts Miz in one hold, Miz taps out. Like, the biggest pansy. And then on Raw Monday night, the big follow-up is Alex Riley, of all people, beats the crap out of the Miz and leaves him laying like a complete geek. I mean, to me, they've killed the guy. I mean, to me, he cannot be remedied at this point. It just can't be done.
He and Sheamus. You know, so you have Sheamus booked to scream like a
Sheamus,
girl.
I think, still hope. But not the Miz.
Because he's so young, but you look at it and go, what the hell did you do that for? Have him run away, make him King of the Ring, give him the goofy outfit, and then beat him to death. Other than he can say on a DVD later on that, you know, I had to go through Hard Knocks too. This is another example of it. I mean, it just, I like Alex Riley. I wish there was a better developmental system because Alex Riley, obviously he's not Lou Fez, but there's a lot of things where he's like, almost real close right off the bat. Plus, he's got a father, Kevin Kiley, who's been a longtime radio show host, and he's got football acumen, and he's good-looking, and he's tall, and he can talk, and it's like he's almost there. If he just wasn't seen and been put into the mix and have to be exposed, then you imagine him in like a year from now. If there's an Ohio Valley or something he could have went to where it would, you know, now where's he going to do? Is he going to feud with The Miz? Is he going to go over to SmackDown? If he goes over to SmackDown, what's going to be his
role there?
He's supposed
to be on SmackDown, actually. He was drafted to SmackDown.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, I don't know. It drives me nuts. And Miz, it's like, why? Is it just because he had popularity from other places? Because that would be the only thing that makes sense. Although it wouldn't, because then why aren't you killing David Otunga then? The Miz thing just... He pulled it off well, doing the same type of thing Jericho did, where after he turned on Morrison, he put the suit on, he changed his role, all that sort of stuff. And I don't know why they have booked him the way they have, other than they figure people are still going to respond to him anyway, which is true, but it didn't make any sense the way he got so brutally laid out. And the fact that there could have been another ending to that match on Sunday night without them beating him to death 2-on-1. Miz could have did that for the entire time and then had a screw up with Riley at the end, you know, which would have at least given credibility in the loss.
That would have made even more sense. That would have been even better. That would have been far superior to what they did.
Yeah, so I don't... It's one of those things where it's like, I don't get it. I don't get why you'd want to do something like that, but I didn't understand it. I don't understand with Barrett, with Sheamus, and, I mean, you know, take your pick of how many others, you know, over the years, too. It just didn't make any sense to me.
Let's do some of these emails here. I promised we would do some, so here we go. Brian, how are you? Thoughts on Terry Taylor's firing? Is this the beginning of an overhaul in TNA management? No, this had nothing to do with that. There may be an overhaul in management, but this was a legal-related issue. And apparently he got the trifecta, a legal-related issue in WWE, WCW, and TNA. So that's quite the deal right there. But that's the story going around. So,
is
no,
Sinclair
this is
looking
not...
for people?
Is who?
Is Sinclair looking for people?
They may be. We got a question here about Karma, which is some news that we should talk about, actually. This person says, Brian or Mike, will WWE keep Awesome Kong, that's Karma, under contract, or will they release her since she has gotten pregnant? I can't imagine Vince is very happy. This is an interesting one. She's going to go on TV tomorrow and apparently speak about what happened. I don't know what she's going to say. I heard she was pregnant like Monday night after the whatever they did the gimmick where she broke down and cried. Someone said she was pregnant. And so I asked around and like everybody thought she was pregnant, but no one would actually say anything. So I suppose tomorrow it could come out that it's something different, but certainly everybody in WWE believes that she's pregnant. So, you know, a decade ago, this would have been a disaster for her. It may still be a disaster, but I just kind of think that like Stephanie McMahon and Hunter both have little kids. You know, they both have babies. Vince is a grandfather. Linda ran for Senate, and she may run again. You can't fire Karma because she got pregnant.
That's closer to it. That's a little bit more closer to it. I mean, look, Dawn Marie sued him because they fired her when she was pregnant. The fact that Linda, I mean, they are high profile like that. I mean, hey, I know they're independent contractors and they can claim a lot of stuff, but PR-wise, it would be a very bad idea to fire Karma, saying just because the only reason would be she got pregnant. And even though she really isn't she being billed as Triple H's second biggest project? So he's two for two right now as far as how these things are going. And I think it is going to be somewhat disastrous for her, too, because... The whole gimmick, well, you know, it may not be, but the whole gimmick right now is people get happy when her face comes up out of the screen and the music hits and the piano goes, and it's like she's going to go out there and kill skinny chicks, you know, and people have reacted to that. So it's going to be interesting to see when she comes out and says she's, I mean, they could come up with something awesome for this, and they could do, if they put the time and they invest into it, they could do a real life thing when she's ready to come back and stuff like that. And I don't know, but she was brought in as a monster, and they did something, you know, on Raw where she just fell in the middle of the ring and cried. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes as far as the reaction on Monday night and where they go from here.
Yeah, there are things you can do. I don't know what. But, I mean, I'm sure there are if you're really creative. I haven't given this one much thought because, I mean, this This is like one of those things that Jim Cornette would tear his hair out in Ohio Valley when WWE threw a monkey wrench in his plans. I mean, you created, I mean, she was like the biggest superstar that had been created in the shortest period of time in quite a while for WWE. And then suddenly she got pregnant. It's like, wow. You know, you got to come up with some good ideas to get out of this problem here.
Or, you know, you take the time while she's gone to turn it into something a little bit more serious than what it is, even though, you know, it doesn't take much thought to do that, where it's like, yeah, I had my kin. I'm still a feminine diva in a lot of ways, and now I'm going to go back to killing skinny chicks. But then again, they actually have to stick with that and explain it. 9 months is a long time, or 12, really, because she'll be gone longer than nine.
Yeah. What were the circumstances behind Randy Savage leaving TNA in 2004 and not wanting to work his final scheduled match? I think it was largely that Savage just, he didn't think he could go. And he didn't want people seeing him not be able to go. And he just walked away.
Well, yeah, I don't think he needed the money. There was the whole Hogan thing. Yeah, Hogan with a big spotlight on him and him being, I guess, somewhat self-conscious about how he looked, which was always a... said about him, and he was serious about being, I mean, proud of being the Macho Man Randy Savage, and just didn't need it and rolled out.
Brian, you once said on a Brian and Vinny show that if Austin did come back for a match, it would be with CM Punk. Been any talk or plans to make this happen? It would be a better feud, in my opinion, than Rock Cena. Thanks. I don't know if I said exactly those words, but, you know, Punk and Austin had gone back and forth on Twitter. And everybody thought that was the reason that I came up with that, but it's not. Austin is a big fan of CM Punk, and I'm fairly confident that if he could come back and do another match, he would be very happy to have a match with CM Punk, and they'd both do promos to build it up, and that would be. There's no talk in that direction right now of anything like that happening, but if Austin could do it, I think he'd be very happy to do that.
God, the promos would be just so incredibly awesome. Now, hopefully even more awesome than Austin's promo at the end of Tough Enough this past Monday night.
This person says, why does UFC use repeat coaches on Ultimate Fighter? We've already seen them, and any increase in their marketability has already been accomplished. Also, more often than not, the second time is less effective entertaining. For example, Mir, Liddell, Franklin, and Hughes. Admittedly, Rampage was better the second time. Still, that is 1 out of 5. Are they short of interesting coaches? Why not Diego against Nate Diaz or Stan versus Mayhem or another fresh pair if they insist on continuing the tired show? Well, the idea actually originally was Brian Stan and Michael Bisping. And I guess they figured, well, you know, Stan may not be all that exciting. Let's do Mayhem and Bisping. And, you know, you cannot – I mean, there's been 13 seasons. That's 26 coaches. You know, you're going to have some repeats. And I think actually Stan and Bisping would have been awesome. You've got the American war hero against the hated guy from the UK. I mean, that's perfect. Mayhem is wacky and that sort of thing, and he's got a good TV personality and that sort of thing. But, you know, I would have, I mean, for sure I would have gone with Bisping and Stan as opposed to Bisping versus Mayhem. And there's nothing against Mayhem. I just think that Stan versus Bisping is a much better story.
See, I just... You know, it's going to be a better fight and everything, but I just think having two igniters on there, Mayhem and Bisping, are going to be so annoying, and I'm sure they're going to try to push for maybe more wackiness.
But you know what? Have you read Stan's book?
No, I haven't.
All right, when you see Brian Stan speak, like when you see him cut his promo at the end of his fight and when you see him at the press conference, he's like a very professional guy. He's done public speaking. He's a war hero. He's gone around. You know, he's professional. He knows what to say. He knows what to do. Now, if you've read his book, this guy's got an edge, and this guy has got an ego, and this guy, believe me, if Michael Bisping got under Brian Stan's skin, which guaranteed he would, this would be great. I can just tell you this would be great.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I know it would be. But with that said, I wouldn't want to have Stan doing it, frankly. I'd have Mayhem and Bisping do it because you'll still make money with Stan against either one of those guys, especially Bisping. Unless you were to be knocked out in 1 second or something like that as soon as he walked out there, like Half Gracie Gomi style. That's the only way. I mean, I just... I understand what you're saying, but I think this is going to be better for TV purposes, honestly, with Stan. Just, I don't think I would have Stan doing the Ultimate Fighter. Then again, I don't look highly really upon the Ultimate Fighter concept anymore, so that doesn't help matters either.
If Bisping became awesome on this show with Mayhem and beat Mayhem, and then you go with Bisping against Stan, you know, that's big too. But do you think Bisping beats Mayhem? Mayhem nearly tapped out Jake Shields.
Oh, dude, Mayhem's awesome. Yeah, but I think Bisping can win. I don't think he will. I think Mayhem does. But still, it wouldn't. Even if Bisping loses, you can still do Bisping Stan for the exact same reasons he mentioned, and it would still be a pay-per-view semi-main event, even if he lost to Mayhem.
Yeah. Well, everybody, that is it for this segment. We'll be back in just a moment with the final segment. We'll talk a little bit more about some various wrestling news. And then we're going to wrap it up for the week. Live here from Vegas, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And here we are with just a couple of minutes left in the program, and we have breaking news, Mike.
Big breaking news?
TNA did a 1.19 rating this week and 1.7 million viewers. Seriously? Yeah.
I'm stunned by that.
Sure. Did you watch the show this week?
I didn't see it. No, I have it on the DVR. I guess I'll watch it possibly before the next one comes on. I've not heard very many good things about it, but I'm glad they spent all that money on the name change and all that other stuff, you know, because it's money they really needed to spend to get that 1.19.
You know, Eric Bischoff did an interview and he said something to the effect of, you know, people shouldn't have got excited about this. You know, there's no reason to get excited. We're just making some little changes here and there. Why bother?
Well, that's the whole thing. Little changes compared to if you change the name of the company and the look and the colors and the logo and all that stuff, that gives the impression to people you're changing stuff up.
But they didn't.
No. TNA.
TNA, everybody.
Hopefully they didn't spend so much money they couldn't give Ric Flair some of it so he can go pay off high spots and not be sent to jail on contempt of court charges.
Yeah, Flair's in trouble, buddy. I'm pretty sure he's going to pay the money. He's not going to jail. But hey, you never know. I mean, believe me, with Ric Flair, you never know. And that's coming the week that he gave that quote to Dave in the Observer about how, you know, Savage saved all this money and he was a miser and you know, he's got millions in the bank probably and he's dead. And meanwhile, Ric Flair's 61 years old and he ain't got no money, but he's still living. And he's like, live your life every day. And there's got to be like a happy medium there,
yes,
in my opinion, between Ric Flair and Randy Savage. There's got to be that happy medium there somewhere, everybody. So keep that in mind when you go out there and live your life. Here in Vegas, in fact. All right, Mike, we're going to wrap this up, but I want to thank you very much for doing the show today. I want to thank everybody for listening. We are on every Sunday, 3 Pacific, 6 Eastern. If you can't hear the show wherever you're at, you can always get it at WrestlingObserver.com. We've got them up on the website streaming live, so check it out. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, and we shall talk to you then. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.